And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Marilyn Schlitz with us. This hour, we'll take your phone calls as we talk about the other side. Welcome back, Dr. Marilyn Schlitz with us. Marilyn, in this reality courtroom, how do you think the jury would decide based on is there life after death?
I think most people believe there's something there. I think people have had experiences that give them a sense of that. I think that there are a lot of experiences that people report, you know, beyond the survival of consciousness or identity, you know, people reporting things like precognition, knowledge of the future, people, you know, doing what you did about looking into your mind for information about a geographical location, the whole remote viewing paradigm.
Right.
You know, there are all kinds of experiences that people have had that they report regularly and that the majority of our population, including people with higher levels of education, report. So this isn't just something that people experience who have no education, and, you know, the critics would say, you know, they just don't know any better. In fact, what it is something that people have very direct personal experiences about and which can change their lives.
And you have written in the book how some people's lives have been changed dramatically through this change.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation, and we were very interested in trying to understand how people can gain a perspective on life that is richer and fuller and less filled with stress and anxiety, and how can we do that? And we know that a lot of people can become very rigid and fixed in their perspectives and opinions, but it's also possible that people, you know, begin to shift their perspective. And these kinds of experiences can lead to the sense that the world is more expansive and more complex and more mysterious than we had previously understood. So we started to interview people about it. We talked to the mystics and we talked to the great spiritual leaders and people representing different kinds of, you know, traditional ritual practice type of orientations, and in that we really created kind of a change model that said to us that there are ways in which we can begin to bring our awareness and our intention to creating our life in ways that are positive, are imbued with meaning and purpose, and that ultimately lead to happier, healthier experiences.
How do younger people react to these things now? What do you think?
Well, I think we have seen a generation of people grow up with the media, with video games that expand their sense of what they're capable of. There's, you know, certainly a lot of fascination with, you know, horror movies. I think you were talking about that in the last program. You know, I think our imaginations are very fertile. I think popular culture has a way of training us, and we know that these kinds of topics are extremely interesting for people who choose TV shows or movies to go see. So what's that about? You know, is that about just something that is idle curiosity, or is it something that helps them to take a deep dive into their own personal experiences? And I think the latter may be what's happening.
Let's take some calls. We'll pick it up by going to Giovanni in Los Angeles on the Wildcard Line. Hey there, Giovanni.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Great. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while, and I'm always listening. I love the show. As always, and Dr. Marilyn, thank you so much for the work that you're doing on consciousness. It's absolutely necessary. You're a pioneer, and I hope that you continue doing your work, and I hope that this births more wonder and curiosity into this world. But I just wanted to share an experience of mine that it just really sprang to mind when I heard you talk speak about the forest or about the jungles, and itself being a form of consciousness or a kind of a pure consciousness. Well, my parents are from Nicaragua, and our indigenous people are very, very have a very rich culture of mysticism and also you know, being able to travel into, you know, interdimensionally and explore the true potential of the mind through through ancient practices. And so it's been instilled in me over time, the practice of meditation. One moment, upon my travels, I was traveling to Nicaragua, and in Nicaragua there is a jungle called La Selva Negra, or roughly translated, the Black Jungle. And this Black Jungle is just—it's an ancient jungle. It's most of it is untouched by man, very rarely explored. Still rich with undiscovered. Lord knows what's out there, but. When I was in this jungle, I sat down to meditate, and while I was meditating, maybe an hour into my meditation, I felt what I believed to be this pure consciousness. I felt the jungle calling out to me. Now, it was so strong that I had trouble breaking from my meditation, and to a certain point, I became a little bit timid, a bit fearful, because I kind of lost control over my ability to extract myself from the meditation for a moment. And I believed that this pure consciousness was calling me or trying to pull me into it somehow. And I just wanted to share that consciousness. I do believe that there's more out there, absolutely. And the more we explore, the more we'll find. Just like you say, if we put it into our minds that there's something there, we will find it, as opposed to shrugging it off and not believing something is there.
What do you think of that, Marilyn?
I'm so grateful for that comment and the question. I appreciate your supportive words. And I think that one of the reasons that many traditions have a guide, you know, a position in society that is that spiritual leader or, you know, the mystic who's been on the path before so they can help guide the process. Because I think it's true that you can get pulled into realms of experience that are unfamiliar, that are unchartered, and that have this capacity to kind of take us out with them. And if you are with somebody who's experienced in a lot of this kind of journey work, they can help calibrate that and, you know, keep you grounded in the experience. But it sounds pretty remarkable. I will say one time I was in a meditation practice with Francis Vaughn, who is no longer in this plane of experience, but she led this meditation where she took our identity into a bubble, and the bubble left the body and went off somewhere. And I know that I got pretty lost in that moment, and I thought, if I didn't have the kind of grounding that I had, I could see how some people could be very frightened or destabilized by that. And in fact, there's a woman, Willoughby Britton, who is a psychiatrist and has really been looking at some of the difficulties surrounding meditation. You know, we think about it always as a really positive thing, but it's also important to recognize that sometimes people can get into realms of experience that they have no way to navigate. And so I'm very grateful for your question and your comments, and keep exploring. It's a great adventure.
Indeed it is. Next up, let us go to Alice in Wonderland. That's Honolulu, by the way. Hi, Alice. Welcome to the show.
Yes. George.
Hi there.
And Dr. Marilyn, I am so pleased to hear tonight what was being said, and I have the proof that there is the other side, George. When my husband passed away 6 years ago, mm-hmm. He was an unbeliever. He was a good Christian, but doesn't believe in spirits and things.
Okay.
Now, I have been listening to, you know, all of the programs from way back when Aunt Belle was on and his wife and you. Yes, and I've had these experiences, and I don't know who to tell them to sometimes. Now, my husband, of course, who was an unbeliever, after he passed away, about just 3 days, but before this happened, on the service, the burial service on that hill, just as he was going down into the ground there, the storm came up. Beautiful. It was wild. The wind and everything. It just happened so fast, and then it stopped. It took only a few minutes. It was very odd. Now, as we were leaving the cemetery, my son, the oldest one, said, "Mom, when we were getting into the car to go home, Dad came home with us."
Wow.
I said, "What do you mean?" He got in the car also, because they could just smell him. The car was filled with his body odor. And my husband was a very clean person, but he had this scent about him. He wasn't a smoker or nothing, but here comes my son saying that, and I just let it go. But then a few nights passed. I was sleeping, and my left foot was still bothering me from an accident we had at Sears from the escalator.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sound asleep now. I felt my left foot going up in the air, and there was my husband at the end of the bed lifting my left foot.
Wow, you could clearly see him?
Oh, beautiful, yes. Yes, he always wore his white T-shirt with a V-neck and shorts. He had a tan short on. And he passed away before he could hit 94. I'm so sorry.
It's a pretty good run, though, wasn't it?
Oh, he was in perfect specimen. The doctors always ask, what do you do for him that he has the body of a 70-year-old man and he's 93 years old? I said, nothing. He does it all. He exercises, you know, and walks, and he watches his diet. My husband never had a wrinkle on him. But, George, this is the thing. He pulled my leg up, and I woke up, and I said, you know, and I looked at him, and I said, Tom, that hurts. My foot hurt. And he says, I want you to take care of this foot. You better see the doctor again. And he dropped it, and that was it. He was very upset that I was neglecting.
Did you go to the doctor right after that?
Yes, I have been. But the thing is, George, my mother also came to visit him. You know, he was a non-believer, as I told you. But they were churchgoers,
mm-hmm.
good Christian Protestants. But they even taught Sunday school, his sister, Dr. Inn. But the thing is, he told me after 7 years this happened. He says, Alice, your mother came to visit me. I said, when? When we lived on the young woman to the street. But I said, why didn't you tell me? After 7 years, you're telling me. He said, I didn't want to tell you. I said, what was it all about? Well, she stood at the end of our bed, and he got up, and there she was standing at the end of the bed. And, Mom, what is it, you know? And she says, well, Tom, I want to know how Alice is doing. Because I was 6 months pregnant when she passed away. And she was concerned how my health was doing. She passed away March 1st. She was only 54.
There's something to it. How old are you now, Alice?
I'm 94.
94? Good for you.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, George, I have been wanting to call you several times because we listen to you every night, my son and I. And he's a believer now, like, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't a believer 5 years ago, but he's been listening to your programs, and he has changed. And for wonderful, he believes in an afterlife. And so he's not afraid of passing on, just like me. But I have, you know, other children who are, they're non-believers. They just go to church all the time, but they're not.
But they don't believe.
Yeah, they don't believe in the afterlife. But the thing is, George, I have been having this first attack when I was 7 years old. I love to be a Catholic, but I'm not Catholic. I'm everything, as my dad says, you know.
How were you, what were you raised as?
We were raised as just from the heart. He said, your church is right here, right in your heart.
So no formal
religion. You have to go to a certain church. Never. My dad was a Roman Catholic. My grandma Nelson was also. And they were the Catholics. They were strict. But he became a Protestant, and then he decided at the end, in his late 70s, he wanted to become a Buddhist. And he says, I said, Dad, what happened? He said, because the Buddhist people don't go to war. They don't seem to be fighting all the time, fellas. When you read the Bible, you know, it's always fighting. Well, George, you know the Bible. I have read the Bible too. I went to Bible school and everything. But the thing is, this happened to me when I was 7 years old because my two girlfriends were Catholics. They went to the Sacred Heart Church. And while I was in there, I wasn't a Catholic, so I would still go with them at 7 o'clock Mass on Sundays. And I wouldn't have breakfast, too, because they're going to confession. And I didn't eat also. But there I was while they were getting their confession done. And I was sitting there at the pew, and I passed out.
You passed out?
But when I passed out, my neck fell on the back of the pew, you know?
Yeah.
So my breathing was cut off.
Jeez, you could have died.
Yeah, I was. That's when I met Jesus. I mean, this is something that, till this day, you know, and even the priests, when they came to get me, the two of them, they thought I was a goner. But
you've been through a lot, Alice. Me,
when my two girlfriends, Mariah and Bernice, came up to me, when they came back, they said, Alice. And you know what? Jesus was already with outstretched hands, and the angels behind him. You know, George, I have never seen anything so beautiful in my life. And we never had color TV. All we had was a radio at home. This was back in the 30s.
Of course, in those days, that's all you
back
need.
Back in the 30s. Just the radio. And I tell you what, I had it all in colors. And when I hear your callers call in to say they have been up and came back, I find it very difficult to believe some of the stories because my visit was not like that. I know what he looks like.
But yours was a good visit, wasn't it?
Beautiful, George. And Jesus is so handsome.
I love it. Hey, we're going to take a quick break in a moment. Marilyn, that was a great call. 94 years old.
So inspiring, Alice. Thank you. And also, one of the things, a couple things. One is a lot of people do feel lonely when they have these experiences because our culture isn't more supportive. And so I think what Alice is saying is it really helps to have programs like yours where people can hear from others and know that they're not, you know, isolated, they're not crazy, they've had these experiences and there's something to it.
There's no doubt about that. Marilyn, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment. And Alice, you keep calling us. I want you to get to 95, 96, 97, get to 100. Our associate producer, Gina Salvati, has a magazine out now called Whole Life Times. It's a leading voice of conscious media. It's really cool. And she would like to send you a free digital edition. So simply send an email to Gina, G-I-N-A, at WholeLifeMagazine.com. Simple as that. Gina at WholeLifeMagazine.com and request the free digital edition. On our next Coast to Coast program, Marianne Winkowski joins us for a couple hours to talk about mediumship. And then, of course, those Friday night into Saturday morning, open lines. And welcome back. Our final segment with Dr. Marilyn Schlitz. Marilyn, what do you think of mediums?
There's been some very interesting research. Some of my colleagues, Arno Delorum and others at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, were looking at the possibility that when a medium is getting information that is accurate as compared to when it's inaccurate, there may be measurable differences in the brain. And in fact, that's what they found. It was a preliminary study, but it showed that when people evaluated the statement made by the medium as having been accurate or correct, that the the memory center of the brain kind of cleared out. It was as though the brains of these mediums were creating a space for another set of memories to come in. I find that extremely provocative and interesting. So, yeah, I think there's all kinds of mysteries in this world, and science will only begin to approximate some of these experiences that people have.
Harry Houdini spent most of his life chasing down mediums, wanting to try to communicate with his dead mother. He was unsuccessful.
Well, I think there's been a lot of fraud. There's been a lot of misdirection. And that doesn't mean that all instances of communication are wrong or inaccurate. So, you know, again, it's how do we know what we know? And what is the basis of formulating our beliefs, our convictions, and are they right or not? You know, it's often we get stuck in places that aren't necessarily the best path forward.
Back to the phones now we go. George in Corpus Christi, Texas with us. George, you're up.
Hello, George.
Hi there.
Hi. Like I always like to let other callers call in. Is higher consciousness humanity's destiny because of all our ills? And are we going that way? Is that going to be the only savior for everything bad we do? And that lady before, she had spot on. She said it was about the heart. And I finally believe it is just the heart and the soul. The heart tells what the soul to do, and the soul moves on. And I just wanted to hear her
okay.
talk about that. And thank you, George, so much. I love the show.
Thank you, Joe. And scientists are beginning to think the heart is much more than a pump, Marilyn.
And the gut. I mean, we know that we have multiple sources of intelligence in our bodies, and I think that's extremely interesting. I don't know, in answer to the question, are we evolving toward a higher consciousness, or are we evolving toward greater levels of complexity and technology, but our morality and our ethics haven't really changed that much. I've been watching a show on the Medicis, and we know that, you know, they were catalytic to the time of the Renaissance and promoting art and language and science. But at the same time, there was enormous corruption and, you know, people poisoning other people to get them out of the way, or, you know, really creating false narratives about people. Talk about false news, fake news. You know, it's been happening, and I think people have managed their inability to resolve different points of view through violence. And I'm not seeing right now that there's a whole lot of alternative, higher level, meaning-centered, altruistic kinds of principles that are certainly being communicated in the popular media by our political leaders. I'm just not seeing a lot of references to a hopeful message for our own evolution towards something higher, if we want to use that metaphor. And it doesn't mean I'm not hopeful, because I also see that there is tremendous good in the world, and oftentimes we just need to shine the light on that.
I think eventually good beats out over evil, don't you?
I sure hope so. I mean, I think if we have an option of what to believe, that's a good one to believe in.
You sound a little tentative, though, about that.
I'm a little
skittish?
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical of how much we can simply just say, yes, everything's going to be fine. You know, I'm just not sure that that's really where the story goes. I think each of us in our life can make choices. And do we want to grab hold of our highest potential? Do we want to develop our social and emotional intelligence? You know, those things take effort. And if not, people can just resort back to these kind of base impulses that come from the amygdala and the fight or flight. And we don't really get that prefrontal cortex involved in a way that allows us to make wise decisions. One of the things we see about aging, and talking to Alice, was that we know as people grow older, there is this concern that we lose memory, but at the same time, we gain wisdom. So it's as though we get these gestalts that help us to manage our lives better. And so that's one of the hopeful things, at least in terms of our own life development, is as we grow older, we may lose some of the detail, but we'll gain greater insight.
All right, let's go to first-time caller Michael driving in Ohio. Hi, Michael. Go ahead, sir.
How are you doing there, George?
Okay, thanks.
I just wanted to call because I had this story that I had that I was listening to Marilyn, and I normally listen to you all night and don't ever have anything to say. You know, I don't have any stories of my own, but this one.
You got one.
When I was a kid, I was hit by a truck when I was riding my bicycle. And I didn't die or anything, you know. I didn't, like, have a near-death experience, but I remember getting hit by the truck. I remember hitting the ground. And then the next memory I have after that is the sky, looking up at the sky. But then I looked down, and I could see a circle of people around me laying on the ground. And I was just wondering if that's, like, something you've ever heard of before. Like, it's not a near-death experience, but it's definitely an out-of-body experience.
Sure is. And Marilyn, you had something like that.
Yeah, that sounds very similar to my experience. And again, I think what's helpful in telling each other these stories is that it helps us to remember our own instances of this. And yeah, that sounds like a very predictable kind of near-death, out-of-body type experience. It suggests that consciousness may have the capacity to move outside of our physical embodiment.
What is the Noetic Experience? The organization, of course, named after what Edgar Mitchell did, Noetic Sciences. But what does the Noetic Experience mean?
Well, noetic comes from the Greek, meaning direct knowing. So you might think about kind of what we've been talking about tonight, the difference between the objective, rational, reasoned kind of discourse, and then that kind of intuition that bubbles up within us, and we might not have a direct reference point for how we know what we know, but intuitively we know it. And that often can be the most reliable source of guidance for us, even though it doesn't have the rational, logical kind of documentation to support it.
Next up, we've got Shelbyville, Kentucky. Richard's calling us. Hey, Rich, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Marilyn. What a great show.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Hey,
good.
I taught stress management at the University of Louisville for 38 years, and there was a great little book. Marilyn, this part about traps of meditation, Lawrence LeShawn wrote a neat little book called How to Meditate, and he talked about the alluring traps of meditation. People get into meditation, and they forget what they got there for. They got there to learn about themselves, to learn about the world, to understand other people better. But they get caught in all this stuff, like, can I float? Can I fly? And there's this, Lawrence LeShawn relates the story of a student who was sent away by his master to learn a form of meditation that could benefit everybody. And the student shows up later, 5 years later, comes back, and master's even forgot about him. And the student said, Master, you sent me out and I learned this beneficial form of meditation. I found it. And he said, I got so good at it, I could finally float across the Ganges. Hmm. His master said, what a pity. You wasted all the time. For 2 cents, you could have taken a ferry. So, you know, there's these traps that people get caught in. Once LeShawn talked about them, and Marilyn, you've talked about them. And keep doing the great work you're doing. That's wonderful. I'm a 70-year-old man with Parkinson's disease. I had to quit teaching because of it. Tomorrow I will find out in court whether I will continue a more independent life or I will become like under guardianship.
You keep fighting the fight, Richard.
Hey, I will. I will, George. You guys encourage me. Thank you so much.
Thanks, my friend. Thanks.
Yeah, good luck, Richard. We're there with you. Your comment reminded me of something Dean Ornish said. It's in my book, Consciousness and Healing. He talks about how the ancient mystics didn't develop these meditation practices in order to do better in a boardroom or relieve our stress from the busy lives we lead, but really to get to a state of enlightenment and a personal revelation. And I think that's what you're saying. There are these traps. People get almost virtuous around, you know, I've done this or that or the other thing, but it isn't, you know, completely reflective of the grounding that's essential as we live into these insights.
Marilyn, do you think the believer is a little happier than the non-believer?
They say that. I mean, optimism is more prevalent with people who, you know, have this kind of faith in the future, faith in society, faith in each other.
Well, somebody like Michael Shermer, who's a skeptic, so he's looking for evidence, he can't find it, so he doesn't believe. Is he happy within himself?
Well, if you asked Michael, and I did, he would say yes. He doesn't think that it's necessary to have this more enchanted worldview in order to feel happy, that he approaches his life with a great deal of purpose, with a sense of marvel, awe, wonder. And at the same time, he, you know, has developed this line of where he is willing to move. And part of it, I also think, happens when people get overly identified with a particular position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you are in that role of the skeptic, or you're in the role of the proponent. And it doesn't leave a lot of space for that interplay of curiosity and just, you know, questioning.
It's almost 5 o'clock in the morning in New Jersey. Doug's with us. Hey, Doug, thanks for staying with us.
Thank you for letting me hold on there. I appreciate it.
Sure.
How's everything this evening?
Everything's good. Thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. Yes, to your guest. Earlier, it might have even been you, George, who asked a question. Somebody, or it might have been a caller. When you were asking about past lives and reincarnation, someone would have asked if most of these people who had this experience, do they believe in God? And if it had changed your opinion or swayed it in one way or the other. I would be under the impression that if most people have felt that they had been reincarnated, or that they had a near-death experience, that it would definitely justify with them without a doubt that, yes, there is a higher power being, call it God, Jesus, whatever the person's religion may be, or to come up with the thought that we're continuing on and on for a reason or other that yet we cannot understand, but yet if that is a plan, there is somebody in a grand plan maker who has this all worked out ahead of time. It's just not, like you say, there's no such thing as coincidence.
That's exactly right. What do you think of that, Marilyn?
I do think that people who have these kinds of experiences begin to reflect on a worldview that is more imbued with meaning and less reduced to materialism. I think that's really important. And I think that, you know, the mystical worldview engaged in questioning, awe, wonder, you know, love, doesn't necessarily translate into a conventional story around what is God. I think that sense of reverence for the mystery may be a good way to hold that sense that there's something more to reality, and that there are different storylines from different traditions that can help us to explain it.
If you went out and polled people and simply said, do you believe in life after death, what do you think they'd say?
I think the majority of people do believe that.
You think so?
And I think it would also depend on where you ask the questions. If you're in India, for example, it's kind of a given. If you're in a scientific academy at Harvard, it's less likely.
Indeed, indeed. Marilyn, one more time, get out your website for everybody.
MarilynSchlitz.com. It's as easy as that. And I look forward to hearing from people. And I really, really enjoyed this, George. Once again, you are a great interviewer, and I really appreciate it.
Well, let's not let 3 years go by this time, okay?
You got a deal. Let's talk about the court case thing. I like that.
That would be a great TV show.
It'd be so fun. Let's do it.
Let's influence the jury. No, we can't do that.
No, okay. No. It's all about trying to understand how people are influenced.
Can't
right?
do jury tampering. Not on that. Thanks, Marilyn. You take care. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Greg Bishop, Tim Banal, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.